Yeah, good evening, warriors of all ages. Welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection, and Happy New Year. It's incredible. The new year started, and we got warm weather. Right today, it's bright and sunny, 35 degrees. It's not too bad. Ray, what's it like out there in North Carolina?
Hey, Doug. Good to be with you. I think it's probably about 40 degrees today. It's been cold because of the wind, but it was pretty good. It's kind of a making up for the Christmas deal, 70 degrees and all that.
Who'd have believed? I mean, we were in 50 degrees on Christmas.
Well, I already missed the warm weather. So.
Well, Happy New Year, Ray.
Yeah, it's a Happy New Year, Doug.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of stuff and talk, and again, this is coming up to be broadcast on Sunday, and again, this week, President Obama, I don't know what we're going to call him, self-appointed king, came out with another idea of what he wants to do to try and control all the crime, violence, and everything in our nation, and again, it got me upset every which way but loose, because he's aiming and making suggestions that have no impact on crime or have no effect on the criminal that's creating all the problem. Doesn't that bother you, Ray?
It bothers me a lot, Doug, because I see so much violence, but I know a lot of good people that have armed themselves because of it. You know, in my own personal opinion, this is just my opinion, but I think Mr. Obama came into office trying to reorganize the world. He was a community organizer, and I think he's done it with nations now. And he's trying to bring Middle Eastern countries, third world countries, into with a first world country, or America, and trying to make a second world country out of all of us. They're trying to bring us in and blend us together, and it just doesn't work. Christianity does not gel with other religions like Islam, and Islam doesn't want to gel with Christianity, and they're not getting together. They have different value systems. They have everything different. And in America, they call us rednecks, or they call us, because of our God, because of our Bibles, and because of our guns. You know, we get this bad, name. And it's a lot of conservatives, it seemed like, have been the reason for all the disruption. Mr. Obama has kind of made some laws that goes against conservative values with their guns and with things like that. And I know they're not disarming us yet, but I wonder if it's a long-term plan here. It looks like it's being dismantled. The Second Amendment is being dismantled.
Totally is.
And that's the way they've done a lot of things.
The Second Amendment is the only thing that protects the rest of the amendments and protects us. I mean,
that's right.
We look at Australia. They had a horrible event, and then they blamed everything, and they completely disarmed that nation.
Yeah.
We have England that has happened to the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
And England did that before World War II, and they had no defense in World War II, and as a consequence, they had to have Lend-Lease, where all the American farmers got their guns and shipped them to England to prevent the Nazis from invading the nation.
That's called just a simple self-defense. I know, working with martial arts and police officers and those things, if you make yourself look like a victim, you will become a victim. They always go after the weakest. And America, I think the Second Right or Second Amendment is really the Alamo to America. If we lose that one, we lose the battle. And we've got to protect that battle.
That's real important. I think when I look at it, and both of us have been involved in law enforcement. I mean, you've been a chaplain for years and years and years and teaching and training and everything. And, I mean, we have to come back and look at what's going on. I mean, your average citizen out here has got a gun. He uses it just like a tool. It's another hammer or a shovel or a saw or a computer, whatever you have.
Yes,
and they don't misuse it. They teach their family how to use it. They teach the kids proper use.
Well,
all that stuff is – pardon?
It's tradition. It's going on for generations. Where men teach their children or sons how to hunt. They teach their families how to provide sometimes and then protect themselves when they have to. I think if Mr. Obama had studied more American history, he might have understood that this nation started out in a battle where people armed themselves. And I think it's continued on because of that reason. We never put our guns down. And, really, you just can't disarm the American people. It wouldn't be America.
I think what's incredible over the last Christmas season, the sheer numbers of new guns and the Christmas guns that were bought again here in the last month. I mean, it's a staggering amount. And one thing that's important, the reason they understand that, is because no matter where you are in the United States, when you go to buy a new gun through a dealer or whatever, you have to undergo a background check through the national background system, which is basically run by the FBI or the police. And so they know who has applied and everything, and the sheer numbers, I mean, we're talking incredible millions of guns were sold over for the Christmas season again.
And I wish I had stock in it.
Pardon?
I wish I had taken stock in Smith & Wesson or some of these other gun manufacturers, you know, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, because you'd be making a lot of money today just on the guns and weapons that have been bought. I got a permit recently. I wanted to get another weapon, and I've got a bunch of rifles and pistols, and I use mainly for hunting. If you're going to bear hunt, you've got to have a good pistol with you, because there's times you can't maneuver a long rifle in a lot of briars and a lot of thick thickets. You've got to have a good handgun. So I have a bunch of handguns, but they're used for particular devices, you know, particular thing that I get into. But I went, and it only took me about 15 minutes to sign a couple of papers. I guess they ran a background check, because they came back about 10 minutes later and gave me my papers, and I paid them and walked out. I don't know exactly what they're checking or how they're checking. The state of North Carolina says, you know, they don't keep records of who buys guns, but the federal do. So you don't know what's going on.
You know, it comes down to it, I think, and this goes back to the crime control. I mean, he mentioned Chicago. Chicago is a crime haven, has some of the strictest gun controls laws in the world, and they've always had them.
Right.
And it doesn't do any good. And one of the things that I propose, and again, this is coming from law enforcement, and this is my thoughts and ideas. I mean, you know, upon conviction, this is just what I'd propose to deal with this stuff. Upon conviction for carry a gun or any firearm in any type during the commission of any crime,
right,
the individual shall be sentenced to 20 years in prison without parole or probation.
Right.
Upon conviction for carrying or firing any firearm or any type during the commission of any crime, the individual shall be sentenced to natural life in prison without parole or probation. And if they're going to shoot and wound somebody or kill somebody, hey, it's time to put them up against the wall.
Well,
I mean, you know, and use a bow and arrow where you can retrieve the arrow, because, I mean, they're not salvageable. And the idea that, when we look at it right here in Illinois, the numbers that are committing these crimes over and over again, that are released over and over again, that go out and shoot each other over and over again, is staggering.
It is. You know, you can't make a man bad you can't rehabilitate him. You send him into a prison, there's people in there just as bad or worse than he is. He learns how to do it. I saw a man one time break into a building. He went through a big padlock. They had a big padlock on his thing. And he was going to show me and a couple of guys how you could do it. He took a little piece of aluminum, it was like a Venetian blind. He cut it a certain way. He took a pair of pliers. He worked it into that lock, and he turned it, and the thing flopped right up. And I said, "Where'd you learn that?" He said, "In prison." He said, "We teach each other all kinds of stuff in prison." So they come out, and they're worse than what they were when they went in. And what you just said, I can agree with it, but I really hate to feed this guy for 20 years and educate him, and you come out a lawyer, and then he wants to sue everybody. It's really a broken system, Doug. I'm not sure how to fix it. I was telling you recently about a drugstore, or it wasn't a drugstore, it was a convenience store robbery, and a guy pulled a gun out and started shooting, and everybody started pulling their guns out shooting, and they had four or five guys, and the cops had to find all the bullets that had been fired that day. Because if you're there and you're trying to stop the problem and you end up shooting somebody, well, what happens to you? You know, there's so many legal aspects to this thing, and our Constitution has been picked apart because of personal problems and the Bill of Rights and all these things. Boy, and I'm telling you, I don't know how to fix it, Doug. I really don't.
Yeah, but either way, you have to stop the crime from happening, and it's a very small proportion of the population that's committing an incredible proportion of the crime, and it seems like it's just a revolving door on some of those individuals.
It is.
And the police arrest the same ones over and over again, and I've seen that happen, and I've talked to them, and they're frustrated.
They
and
know.
It's almost like, well, they can't be held accountable because they didn't get their Wheaties or somebody didn't give them a hug today.
Yeah, and a lot of times, by the time the police officer gets out there. He tears his clothes up trying to take this guy down. He messes himself up. He might hurt himself. By the time they get the bad guy to the jail and the cop gets cleaned up and changed clothes, the guy's back out again before he could ever finish paperwork and all the stuff he has to do. And there's times when, because of all the aggravation and frustration, the law enforcement may just turn their eyes another way. It's like that, like they didn't see something, because it's so aggravating to these law enforcement. And it's really, I think, some of the solution in just like Chicago. The cops, they don't want the cops there anyway. And the cops, if they just went away for a day, they would solve their own problems, because they're killing each other constantly. It's like somebody's fighting. Both your enemies are fighting, so you throw a knife at them and let them fight it out, you know. And I don't know if that would be a solution. That may be just a harebrained thing, but how do you stop it? And I do think that some of the stiffer penalties do curb some of the violence. If you know you're going to lose every right you have and go to prison for 20 years, that would be some kind of a thing that you would avoid if at all possible.
Well, it's the same thing we've talked about on the show with numerous guests who are experts in the field. I mean, when somebody has a gun that they're well-trained and know how to use it, the bad guy ain't going to come after them. They're going to go to where the, as you said before, where the sheep is.
Yeah.
It's not afraid, and there's nothing that's going to happen to them when they come into it. So, it's really a crucial area. So I think with that in mind, I think I want to go to the idea of just some gun safety and gun use and everything. I mean, as we know, it's through history. Everybody got a Christmas gun, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. It used to be a big deal, from a BB right on up to a 22, right on up to other weapons. My son-in-law, last Christmas, he got two grown daughters now. They're both married. He bought them both automatic shotguns, little black shotguns. And I thought, man, what a Christmas gift, you know. But he said, well, you need protection. And so he gave it to him. And it seemed a little strange, but then again, it didn't. They're big people, and they should learn responsibility. They've taken gun classes. They've done everything legal. And so they're not afraid to use them if a bad case happens.
And we got to remember the police can't respond. If you live in a rural area and you call the sheriff or somebody, it's 20 or 30 minutes. Even in communities and towns, they don't respond very fast, if at all.
Well, that's so true. And the bad guys know it, too. And so they're going to avoid the law enforcement if at all possible. And if you don't have some kind of a plan or some kind of a system or some kind of a plan B or a backup or something, you're going to be out there on your own. And you don't really want to do that, because these guys come armed. And, we've always said the bad guy leaves home with a plan. Our plan is to go out and go to Walmart, get some milk or whatever, and go back home. They've got a plan to do away with you. They're going to hurt you, they're going to rob you, they're going to kill you, they're going to do whatever. They do not want to go to jail. And I've always found out, Doug, that they will look for the weakest person or the most vulnerable person, because they're not going to jeopardize themselves over stealing something or whatever. If they get hurt, they're out of business. They can't rob no more. And so they're going to avoid that if possible. They'll go after the weakest link for their own preservation. And so you have to avoid... there are a lot of ways to defend yourself. Now, a lot of guys carry weapons on their sides, and that's one defense. You know, I remember seeing a movie one time where two guys went in to rob a bar, and it happened to be a cop bar. And they walked in, and everybody's carrying guns. It's like, this ain't the place I want to rob, you know. So you can defend yourself like that. But another way you defend yourself is don't make yourself a target. Don't act weak. Don't act sick. Don't act like you're bad off. Don't limp if you don't have to. Straighten yourself up when you get out of your car. Walk in there like you own the place, and the bad guy will usually go after a weaker person. A lot of ways you can do that.
Well, so it comes down to it. I mean, the Christmas came around, and the Christmas tree lights were shining, and I mean, I can go back to when I was a child and got my Red Ryder.
Right.
I think I think every child, every boy from 7 to 97, you know, dreams of that Red Rider under the Christmas tree at some time in their life.
That was awesome, yeah. Yeah, I watched that movie this Christmas, too. I can't think of the Christmas Story, whatever they call it. I forgot what they called it, about the kid that got the Red Rider BB gun for Christmas and about shot his eye out with it and all that. But, you know, that, man, that was fun. That was good stuff, you know.
Yeah, well, today, you know, whether you get a rifle, and a rifle, again, comes in a whole bunch of different calibers. Obviously, the primary rifle caliber that are used for plinking everything is a good old 22 caliber rimfire. And there's a whole bunch of different guns, you know, fairly inexpensive, you know, less than $100 on up to, if you want to get a Target version 22, you can spend thousands of dollars.
Sure, yeah.
You know, so you got that, which are most plinking. And then obviously if you live in hunting country, you're going to get a deer rifle from any from a 30-30 to a 30-06 or a, you know, 243 or a 7mm. These are all different caliber of guns, fire different calibers of bullets.
Right, right. Yeah, you got big game. You don't want to go out there with a small caliber rifle trying to shoot big game. All you're going to do is hurt them.
And
I knew a guy one time that he had a 30-06, but he was using military ammunition, which was armor piercing. And even the rifle bullets were armor piercing back in World War II. And you could shoot a tree, and the bullet would stop, you know, within inches of going into the tree. But there was a little rod inside of it that penetrated the tree and went out the other side. And that's the way armor-piercing works, even for tanks and things like that, where you shoot a bazooka at them, and the round goes off when it hits a tank, but the rod inside of it goes through the tank, and that's how they blow a tank up. Well, if you shoot that type of rifle bullet at a deer, all you do is wound him. You might knock him down, but that rod went through him. And so this guy shot several deer with that rifle, and the deer always ran off. And then when he would find a deer, he would, if they did find him, it was because those rounds were not made to stop them, a deer. They were made to stop other things. And so you have to have the right bullet for the right thing you're doing. I shoot 180 grain soft tip bullets on my 30-06. It's a high powered round. It will knock a bear down. It'll knock a deer down. It'll knock anything down. But I don't go squirrel hunting with it. I don't go bird hunting with it. You would disintegrate them. And so I have a 22 rifle with a scope on it, and it's probably 50 years old, and I use that for squirrel hunting. And I could put a bottle cap out there and away from me, and I've got a big scope on it, a high-powered scope, and I could shoot that bottle cap 50 yards. And so it's great for squirrel hunting and things like that. You know, so you kind of pick it, the weapon, for whatever you want it for. And it's always available. One man said he likes tools that bark here and bite over there. And that's the way they work, you know. So it's fun shooting stuff. What is it fun when stuff starts shooting back now? That's a bad thing.
Yeah, so anyhow, you get the rifle. And then obviously if you're going to do some bird hunting, everything, you know, pheasants or quail or whatever you have, or then you get a shotgun.
Yeah,
and obviously that's great for all kinds of things. I mean, you're going to have a large pattern and all the small BBs on up to large size, a slug for a deer gun. But again, this is going to have different capabilities than a rifle, and a lot of people will get a shotgun, which is going back to antiquity. I think most farmers and everybody kept a shotgun on hand, just like they kept the rifle on hand.
Yeah.
You know, on the tractor, because they never know when they're going to need it or when they're going to go out there and get their food.
Well, you might see the fox before it gets to the hen house, you know. You might have to protect what you are preserving or what you, I mean, people preserve lives of livestock and things like that. I mean, you don't want wolves killing your cow. I don't want to hurt the wolf, but let him go on in the woods and go on up in the mountains. But don't be killing my calves or my cow, because you have to have something. You can't run him down. You're going to have to get him. And so you have to be prepared. And I think that's what it's all about anyway, Doug, is preparation, finding out the right caliber, finding out the right weapon, find out what you want to do. I've got a 410 shotgun that is good for squirrel hunting, rabbit hunting, stuff like that if you wanted to. But mainly, you know, you're able to use a smaller caliber. A child can use it, really, a young boy, rather, 12, 13 years old. But, you know, if you moved on up into bigger game, you have to have bigger rifles for that. But every one of them, Doug, will kill people. And so you have to understand what you're playing with here, because that gun has no conscience. This thing is a small cannon. And when you pull that trigger, that bullet could care less where it goes. And you just have to always be conscious of what you're doing gun safety. Keep locks on the stuff. Keep the bullets away from your stuff. And always be prepared. So,
yeah, the other thing, too, I mean, obviously rifle, shotgun, then obviously a handgun. We've got the wheel guns, which is, you know, you don't see too many of those today. A lot of people go to them. The old wheel gun, the most famous one, obviously, is, you know, the Colt Peacemaker. But yeah, then we got all the semi-autos, which are, again, in the form of a pistol. So that has a magazine that goes in it. So, again, all these have different purposes and different times for use and everything gun. I think most people think of a handgun, again, for self-defense, something that you keep in your bedstead.
I think so, too. And, you know, the reason that law enforcement went to the semi-automatic pistols, like the .45s and the 9mm and stuff like that, was because down in Florida, the FBI tried to stop a couple of bank robbers, and they had assault rifles and all kind of stuff. And these cops, all they had was handguns, and most of them were revolvers that you've got to push the button, dump it out the side, dump all the bullets out, reload it. And what happened was some of these officers were shot in the hand, and the bone fragments out of their hand got into the workings of the pistol, and they couldn't get the pistol to close up so they could shoot them. And some of these guys died over that stuff. And from that point on, they started putting pistols in their hand that they could really load it, unload it, drop it out, put a magazine in it, pull it back with one hand. And so it made a big difference in the law enforcement as far as moving forward. If dirt and things stop your revolver from shooting, you're in trouble, because the bad guy's still shooting. And, you learn from past mistakes if you're smart. And, I have revolvers, but I like semi-automatic pistols, too, with clip or magazine-fed pistols, because, you can put, 20 rounds in a pistol, really, with a longer magazine. And the 6- and 5-shot revolvers may not be enough for you.
Yeah, it depends on the purpose. Well, not only that, I mean, we've got the whole different things now. The other thing, too, a lot of people at Christmas, you might get a black powder gun or a pistol. This is like Kentucky Rifle or one of the old pistols. These are where you can actually get a kit and build it for yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, they come unfinished. You know, you got to do all the basics. You got to have a good knowledge of woodworking and metalworking and actually finishing, so you know how to wood paint and everything else. And so this is something you can get, and you can put that together. I mean, a lot of people have a lot of fun. This is where they build one from scratch. They got all the raw parts that are not finished. They have to finish the parts, and then they have to fit them, and they have to assemble them. But, again, that can give somebody a lot of joy. I mean, you're talking about a lot of work.
Yeah.
But something that can be
beautiful. It's an old muzzle loader, all that type of stuff. But then I have friends that do a lot of black powder hunting. These rifles are like high-powered rifles, only you load them a different way. I mean, you load them through the barrel, and then you've got a cap for it and everything. So the weather doesn't bother it so much. A lot of guys used to go black powder hunting, and if it started raining or got real foggy, they couldn't shoot anymore because the black powder would get moist. And but they have it now where you can hunt, you can do anything with that black powder. And you take a 50 caliber bullet coming at you, that's a hunk of lead, let me tell you.
You're talking about 200-300 grains.
Yeah, I mean, amazing. And I used to bow hunt. I used to bow fish a little bit. I used to, I always deer hunted and bear hunted and squirrel hunted and all those type of things. You just have to pick the right weapon for the right chore, and then you go out there and you enjoy what you're doing.
Same thing.
A girl next door to me one time, I was out there skinning a deer, and she came over and she said, she looked at that skin coming off that deer, and she said, "I thought you were a Christian-going man or something, or a buddy." She said, "I thought you were a church-going man." I said, "Well, I am." And she said, "Well, what are you doing to that deer?" I said, "Well, he's easier to eat if you skin him first." And she walked away. I guess she understood from that point on. But it looks like a hard thing when you're hunting, Doug, and people look at it and they really about throw up. But it's where everything you're eating, meat, came from something. And that animal had to die to get it. They're a lot easier to eat if you kill them.
So, I can remember growing up, we went, both Christmas Day and New Year's and Thanksgiving Day, we'd go out hunting before the meal and bring back, and then the meal went on the table. But that, again, different families, farm families, everybody did that. And I'm glad you mentioned it because, again, today, the other thing, too, you got the rifle, a shotgun, and pistol. But a lot of individuals also can get a crossbow or regular archery equipment, whether a compound or a straight longbow, recurve. I mean, all these different things have the same purposes and objectives and things, and you can just have fun with them where you're out there plinking and shooting paper targets or cans or whatever you have. Yeah. Or you're actually going out there and acquiring meat to put on the table, or God forbid that you have to use this for self-defense. But
that's right. But whatever's available is what you're going to use. If you don't have a weapon, Doug, you better find something real quick. People will use a hammer, they use a baseball bat, they use this, they grab a cane, they grab an umbrella, they grab something. Why not have something that works real good? And that takes as least out of you. You know, if you're 70 years old, 80 years old, you don't have the ability to take off a 20-year-old guy. So you've got to be prepared. I don't rationalize sometimes with people that they're totally against any type of weapons or any type of. They're setting themselves up, even in the Bible. I'm a Christian, and you are too, and we're not opposed to self-defense. That is something that man's been doing ever since man has been around. They protect their families. They protect their home. They protect their livestock. They protect everything they have. And most of the time, if you're smart, you will choose the best weapon to do that with. You can get a bag of rocks if you want to, but why not use a sling? I saw those guys over in the Middle East, man. They're still using slings just like the shepherds used to use, and they're very good with those things, too. That's velocity when that thing comes out of that sling. And, David killed, they said with shepherds, they used to use either this stump, actually it had a big knob on the end of it, a handle, and they called it the rod, actually. And they used to throw this thing at the bears and the lions, and they would beat it with a club kind of thing. But somebody, and they used to throw it at the sheep. When the sheep would walk away and stray away, they would hit the sheep, and he'd run back. But you had to go run and get your weapon again. And so somebody came up with the idea of a sling that you could put a stone in it, and you could sling it 30, 40 yards and hit the animal that you were fighting, or you could hit the sheep, and you didn't have to go get your rock. And so that's what they called, it was an extension of the shepherd's hand. And that's what a weapon really is. And they have contests with those things. Boy, and they're very good with those slingshots and all those type of things. So everybody has particular things that they enjoy. I'm sure they have contests with today's, and they may have people hunt with those type of things. But they really work. And, if I was out in the woods, Doug, and I got lost or I felt threatened, I would have to find me something out there to protect myself with. There's bad things out there in those woods. And you have to kind of be creative in what you're thinking, and you have to plan ahead. And if you were to lose it, I always carry a knife when I go in the woods. I'd grab that thing out, and I'd cut me a stick down, and I'd tie it to the end because I carry string and everything else with me when I go. I'd tie that thing to the end of a stick, and I'd have me a spear. I got to have something. If something comes after me, because I'm one of them out there in the woods, you've got to protect yourself. And I think that's what we're talking about, is self-preservation. Now, I do trust God. I do believe, and I want to give you just 30 seconds of this too, Doug. We're living in a violent world. We're living in a world that's going crazy, and they want to disarm us. They want to put down everything like that. But I really trust the Lord before I trust anything else. And he said, if you will keep your mind on me, I'll take care of you. And in as far as our nation, it says in 2 Chronicles 7:14, it says, if my people who are called by my name would just realize that they need me, they would pray, they would repent of their sins, and they turn from their rotten ways, their wicked ways, God said, I'll hear them, and I'll forgive them, and I'll heal them. And that's where I go to sleep at night, not worrying too much. I wake up in the morning, not worrying too much. I do have weapons, but I use them for hunting. But if I had to use them for protection of my family, God is my first line of defense. If he so chose to do that kind of thing, and I don't know what would happen, but I think all of us have to prepare. We have to be ready, and we listen to God and when he talks to us. So I'm like everybody else, you know. I love to hunt. I love to fish. I love to do those things. One of the tricks I learned about bow fishing, Doug, is that if you're going to bow fishing out in the water, it almost sounds one-sided a little bit. But you take a hula hoop that your child has, and you put a couple corks on it, and you put it in the water, and then you put a couple, like a handful of Cheerios in that, inside that hoop, and then you stand above it with your bow. And when that fish comes up to eat that Cheerios, you shoot him. And it's like fishing in a barrel. That's a little thing I just want to throw in there. So it's kind of evens your odds a little bit.
That's kind of interesting. Well, we get the Christmas gun, whatever we have, or the bow and arrow. I mean, there are certain steps we have to do. I want to go through these again because this is for safety and everything. Number one, I want to read the manual from cover to cover and make sure you understand all characteristics of your new gun or bow or whatever you have. It's also a good idea to learn all about the ballistics of each type of ammunition you can get for your new gun. They can go on Ballistics Calculator, obviously. Winchester.com has an excellent one. Manufacturer's Guidance publications have it. And then, of course, the Gun Digest has the gigantic tables in it. Step two, give your gun a complete cleaning. This is a brand new gun. This means learning how to actually take your gun apart and putting it back together at what's called the military field stripping level. New guns have a lot of stuff with all kinds of protective lubricants. You got to clean that off before you can use it properly. Number three, without any ammunition any place around you or in the practice operating the gun until it becomes ingrained second nature. In other words, you've got no ammo anyplace in the gun or anywhere near you, and you're operating that gun until you know how it works and how to operate it. You could do some dry firing at that time. I mean, snap caps and everything else, these simulate a bullet, but they go in, but there's no explosive or anything. Again, so you can pull the trigger and understand how that works and everything else. And then practice clearing all the malfunctions. How do you clear a malfunction if something goes wrong? So you got to do all that. Step four, identify and obtain the correct ammunition for your new gun. You can't put 45 in a 38. You can't put 20 gauge in a 12.
Right.
This is not going to be a good day. Make sure the good usable ammunition, not some old crusty junk left around your stash. I mean, everybody's had stash, or grandpa had a stash ammo in his left hand. Oh, that's kind of neat. Let me try it.
Right.
It's not going to be safe. Step five, now you get to have some fun. Now you get out and find a safe range location to shoot at, set up your target, ensuring safety at all times. You got to make sure your sights are set for your individual need. I mean, as we all learned, as you learned as a Marine, as I learned when I was in the Army and the Air Force, you have to sight your gun in for you specifically. Not for your brother, your sister, your son, your daughter, your wife, but for you. Because everybody looks through a gun differently, and that has to be sighted in for you. And if you transfer it to somebody else, they have to sight it in for themselves. In other words, you're making sure the bullet's going to go exactly where you want it.
Let me say one thing about that, too, about sighting it in. There's a gun store here, and I'm sure they're everywhere, that if you'll take your scope and put it on, mount it on the rifle, and you take it to the gun shop, they have a certain mechanical thing that they put it in the barrel and in the scope, and they sight it for you. And what it does, it brings it in very close. And then once you leave the store, you go out to the range, and you can tighten it up. But that's one way. You're not all over the target, wasting a lot of ammunition trying to get that thing sighted in. There are ways to sight them in.
Yeah, that's some good bore sighting techniques. In other words, the scope and the gun barrel itself, the trajectory are lined up.
Right, right.
So obviously get a nice safe area, get yourself a great big old piece of cardboard, and make sure you got hearing protection on, make sure you got eye protection on, and go ahead and shoot it. I mean, this is going to be a lot of fun. And then, obviously, you got to make sure the safety is, working. take it on and off. Then you load your gun, make sure you got, for maybe the first time, only one or two rounds. Obviously, if you've got a semi-automatic, they can hold a lot many rounds, and every time you physically pull the trigger, it's going to shoot. Other ones, you have to cock them with a lever, or you have to move the bowl to do it, or you have to pump them. I mean, all different types that you have out there, but again, making sure you have it, everything to know how to use it and where it's going to go.
Well,
they go ahead and load your
gun.
Pardon?
Every time you shoot it on a semi-automatic like that, is that hammer is going to be left at a firing position. And so you need to remember that. When you pull that trigger, it's going to recock that gun. And you better remember that that gun is ready to shoot again. So you either have to shoot it or you have to put that safety on, get that hammer away from that bullet, and reset the pistol. You know, so I've seen people make a mistake of shooting an automatic rifle or semi-automatic and forget about the thing is reloaded again when they take it down out of their arm. And they'd be walking around all over the place and with that hammer back, and you don't want to do that.
Not a good situation. Get into a proper shooting position. Obviously, with a rifle, we have standing, we have prone, we have kneeling. We have all the different positions you can use. I mean, most everybody, especially when you're beginning with a .22 or a BB gun, obviously you're in a prone position, making sure you got a good sight picture, making sure wherever you're shooting it's safe. I mean, you got to make sure you got a backstop available, or your bullet's going to go someplace where it's going to hit the ground and it's not going to interfere or, you know, come on par to anybody. And so the whole name of the game is going out there having fun and simple precautions. And then obviously at the end of the day, you're going to take your gun and you're going to clean it thoroughly again and put it away, keeping the ammo and the gun separate. I think that's probably the crucial thing, is to have them make sure it's unloaded and they're all put away safely.
Yeah, and clean.
And clean.
I had a guy one time came out of hunting. It was a hot day, really, and he was deer hunting, but it was unusual hot, and he sweated all over the gun, and his hands were salty and everything, and he put it away and forgot to clean it. Pulled it out about 3 months later, and the thing was red. I mean, it was so rusted out, pitted, that you could never get it cleaned back up again. So, and I used to take a weapon I'd been using. I'd take it in the shower with me when I took a shower, and I would wash it down just like I did me, and then dry it off and re-oil it. And you have to make preparations. That weapon or that gun is a piece of machinery. And let me tell you a quick story, Doug, that happened to me, and I really made a mistake. I tried to learn from this thing. I had bought a 303, British 303, World War II rifle from a guy for next to nothing. This was many years ago. Well, I went out in the woods one day, and I was going to just shoot it or do whatever. It was deer season. I took my wife's Mercury Cougar. It was a new Cougar, about a year old. And I was driving around, and I met one of my buddies out there. He was hunting. And so we stopped, and we were talking. And I had this British 303 loaded and safety on, and it was in my front seat next to me. And we were talking, and I said, "Oh, well, I'm going home." So I stupidly took it off safety, and I pulled the bolt back. I thought I took the bullet out, but when I closed that bolt, apparently it picked up another bullet, and it went off, and it shot a big hole right through my floorboard. So fortunately, it didn't hit the transmission or anything, but it did blow a big hole through my floorboard, my wife's car. And so when I got home that day, my wife asked me, she said, "You go hunting?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "What'd you shoot?" I said, "A cougar." She said, "You did? I didn't know there were cougars out there." I said, "It wasn't until your car showed up." And I was the only guy who'd ever shot a cougar in Crow Head National Forest, but it was a Mercury cougar. And so I had blown a big hole right through my floorboard. But I tried to learn that from that lesson, because I really could have done some damage that day.
It's a cute story.
Anyway. I've killed a cougar, Doug.
Well, you know, when we look at this stuff, obviously whether you get a rifle or a shotgun or a thing, we got to look at the concept of ballistics.
You do.
And yeah. I think when we're looking at ballistics, we're primarily looking at ballistic for self-defense. I mean, the same thing, I mean, as you've talked about over and over again, and the same thing what we learned in Vietnam and everything, you don't bring a knife to a gunfight.
That's right.
You know, every now and then you run into somebody that's going to, "Well, hey, I got a knife," and they go, all of a sudden, "No, well, I got a Colt," you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
and
it's
again,
illegal to go hunting with a .22 in North Carolina. You have to have something bigger to knock that deer down, because it's really inhumane to hurt something like that. I always have this great fear of wounding that animal and not getting him. That's a terrible thing.
Not be fun. Well, obviously, you know, when we're pulling a gun for ballistics for self-defense, obviously the whole idea, God forbid, you never have to do it. But if you get into a situation where you got absolutely no recourse and your life is in danger and threat and the bad guy's coming at you, if you ever have to fire a gun at them, you want to be pick the adequate bullet or cartridge, round, whatever you want to call it, such that you knock that person down and take them out of action.
Yeah.
It's the same thing when you're going hunting. If you intend to go hunting and you've got your animal that you got a license to hit it, everything's out, everything's set up, you want to make and take it down right away. You don't want to have that wounded where it become dangerous to you or somebody else, or go off, you know, wounded and have a horrible life. I mean, the whole idea is you're going out there and getting some food.
Yeah, that's right. And if you wound an animal, it will fester up if you don't kill him and he keeps walking. I mean, you may kill him a week later, but the meat will be bad, and you won't be able to do it because he'll have a lot of infections. And so if you're going to shoot him, you've got to have something big enough and strong enough that will literally knock him down, or deer won't stop. I mean, a deer is a big animal. A bear will actually come on you. They'll come back and sometimes. If you wound a bear, he's wounded. He knows he's wounded. And they will actually turn on you. So you have to be able to, you know, you can't shoot a bear in the front of him because he's got this huge breastbone. The best place to shoot a bear is in the side, right behind the front leg, and that's where his heart is. And you can knock him down, and it'll kill him right there. A lot of hunters use big shotguns, 12-gauge shotguns, and they use slugs or double-aught. But you got to be close to him if you're going to use that kind of thing. But you don't want to hurt an animal. You want to get a gun big enough, and then you want to train with it to where you can actually hit him where you need to hit him, and you want to sight that rifle in or whatever you're doing, or learn whether if you got a shotgun, if you'll fire it, say, at 30, 40 yards, you'll see where all those pellets spread out, but they leave a pattern. That's where you want to shoot at, where that pattern is, and where you get the most pellets into the target of what you're trying to shoot at. You can't just walk out there and blindly and just, I'm going to go kill a big old deer. Well, you probably won't. You'll probably hurt something, and you don't need to be out there until you learn about that weapon.
Well, God, obviously we look at the physics concepts involved with their kinetic energy and momentum, and I think everybody, when you read the ballistics charts, obviously they give you the kinetic energy, and that's equal to one-half the mass times the velocity squared. In other words, the mass is how much it actually weighs. You'll find these normally in grains. And the more the grains, the bigger it is, obviously. And then the velocity is how fast it's moving. So the kinetic energy is what most bullets are rated on when you go to a ballistics chart. But at the same time, and this goes back to the old weapon, as we talked about with the black powder, this is momentum. This is the mass times the velocity. In other words, the larger the mass, the larger the bullet, the bigger the hole, the more knockdown power it has.
Right.
And I think most everybody has seen this or seen this in history where somebody got hit by a good old 45 long Colt, or they got hit by a 45 auto. They're not going a whole lot farther.
Right.
And that's because you've got a, 250 grain bullet coming out.
Right.
And so that's important. Now, the other thing, too, is expansion. I mean, when the bullet flies through the air, it's going to be a normal shape. But then on impact, you said a reason why you don't shoot the bear in the front. It's hitting the major bones and all this stuff.
Yeah.
That bullet has to expand and knock a major hole. But at the same time, you want all that energy and everything to stay within the target, within the animal that you're shooting.
Right.
And the same thing if a human being. I don't want to have to shoot a bad guy and have a bullet go flying out. I mean, Chicago, they just had a horrible event where a woman was killed in a gunfight, you know, and the bad guy's shooting back at the cops and everything, and this bullet went and hit another woman who was a bystander.
That's the problem with urban Chicago, is that little children get shot all the time by people who are out there. And you have drugs, and those drugs are a business, and these guys are loaded, and they're not worried about the police as much as they are about other drug dealers. And they're out there, and they're ready to shoot anybody, anytime. They close their eyes. They go pulling the trigger on these guns. They'll run shooting these guns. And they, at that moment, they could care less who it hits. But later, an hour later, they found out they killed a five-year-old a girl and her three-year-old sister through those bullets who were just flying through the air. It changes everything. And now you're going to go to prison for a long, long time. And you say, well, I didn't mean to do it. It don't matter. That bullet is an extension. People, a lot of times on 4th of July and things, I was listening to the news one time, and I think it was in L.A., and they said it sounded like a literal firefight where people were shooting guns up in the air. But those bullets will come down, and they will hit you on the head, and they will kill you. So you better, you really need to be conscious of the fact that bullet, I mean, if you've ever touched it, it may have some of your DNA on that bullet or a fingerprint or something, and they will find you probably. And so you better be real conscious of the fact that when you pull that trigger, your life just changed if it's not for a good reason. And so you have to always remember that. So anyway, only hunt in designated places. Don't go out there just rambling through the woods shooting anything you want to see and shooting birds with a high-powered rifle and shooting squirrels with a, you know, with a high-powered rifle. Just, that's not fun, and you'll probably end up in trouble over that kind of mess.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing, too, is understanding what the trajectory is and what the distances are.
I think
people have a hard time understanding distances. I mean, when we talk, how far is 3 feet? I mean, how far is 3 feet when you're trying to measure it without a ruler? Or how far is 100 yards when you're trying to measure it?
Right.
I mean, most bullets and everything, again, with an M16 or everything, a handgun is good maybe out to, what, maybe 50 yards. That's 150 feet or something. And a rifle, we're going out to, you know, before it starts dropping, the trajectory falls off way down, maybe 200 yards or 150 yards. Because it's like a parabolic curve. As it flies through the air, it's got to fall down to the ground.
Right.
And so we're talking about a large drop. I mean, you get an AR-15, which is the old M16, at 250 yards, that bullet's going to drop down 15 or 20 inches.
Yeah, right.
You know, and people don't think about that. So what is trajectory, and where is this going to go, and how do we sight the gun in to do this? And whether we're using a handgun, it could be a 25 auto, a 32 auto, a 9mm, a 38 special, or 357, 40 Smith & Wesson, or 44 Magnum, or 45 auto, or 45 long Colt. I mean, those are your primary handgun things, but most of those bullets are good within, what, 25, 50 yards maybe?
Probably. One thing, when I'm hunting in North Carolina, because we have a lot of woods, and so you don't, it's not like Colorado somewhere where you're out there, but I don't usually, even with high-powered rifles, I don't shoot a deer over 150 yards. Because of the foliage and because of all the terrain and everything. Now, if you're out in a wide open country, you do have to learn. I mean, it takes practice too, because the bullet rises and falls. It's a natural thing that a bullet does. The more power that it has, the less it'll do that. But 2 inches could make a difference between missing the animal and hitting the animal, or maybe not hitting him in the heart, but hitting him in the leg. And so you don't want to do those type of things. What you have to do is, like you just said, you practice, you measure off certain distances, you go out there and you prop up, you get everything stable, you lock your rifle in if you got a scope, and you just learn how many clicks, right and left, up and down, all these type of things to get you where you need to be. And you won't be wounding up everything out there. You know, in the Marine Corps, we talked about snipers too. On the ranges and stuff, you spend 4 days firing a lot of bullets at 100, 200, 400, 500 yards. I think it used to be 200, 300, and 500 yards. That's a long way, five football fields. And you're shooting about a 20-inch target. But what you're doing is you start your rifle off with so much windage. They'll tell you how many clicks to put on your windage. Well, that's pretty easy. But your elevation and things, there are clicks on a rifle, and you can actually click it to understand how many inches you're going to go up and down. And, you know, you have to learn those things, just like a sniper would, really. If you're going to be successful in taking an animal like that, bullets are something else. I mean, it's something, a machinery that you have to really learn if you're going to be good at it. And you want to be good at it, or you're going to be messing stuff up. And the better you are at shooting targets, the better off you will be shooting your whatever you're going after.
You know, everybody gets a different rifle or a handgun or a different ammunition, same ammo, but it doesn't matter. The ammo itself is going to have very specific characteristics. As long as it fits into the gun, it'll do there. But beyond that, the ammo is going to have its own characteristics separate for the gun. So you can buy a low-end 22 or a low-end 30-06, or you go to a high-end expensive 22 or expensive 30-06, it's not going to alter and change how that 22 ammo works. Yeah. Or how that actually bullet works, because that is specifically inherent to the ammunition, not inherent to the gun. Now, obviously, the characteristics and how well it's built, when we start talking, you know, we're talking about accuracy, a minute of angle. In other words, 1 inch at 100 yards, that's how much you could figure a really good rifle is. So, in other words, you're going to have a 2-inch diameter area across the whole thing, or 1-inch area where that bullet can go in any direction, that's a minute of angle. Less 2 inches at 100 yards, we go out there 200 yards, that's 2 inches, 300 yards, 3 inches. So, guns in the thing we run into, you got to practice and practice and practice, yeah. Because most people, individuals, haven't had enough practice or proper training to where they can shoot to the capability of the rifle.
Yeah. One of the
Am I explaining that right?
Yeah, it is. One of the things I found out over the years, and this is probably part of, they teach you this anyway, is when you're trying to sight a rifle in, or especially a long rifle, you only shoot 3 or 4 rounds through that rifle, and then you let it cool off for about 10 or 15 minutes. Because if you don't, after 3 or 4 rounds, the barrel will actually be so hot, it'll start weaving a little bit, and it'll throw your bullets all over the place. It's always been a good thing to, after you shoot 5 or 6 rounds, take out a cleaning rod, put some cleaning solvent on it, scrub the barrel out. Because when you're normally hunting an animal, you only want to shoot 1 or 2 rounds. And so what you're doing is you're trying to get that rifle in the right frame in order to put that bullet where you want it to go. You don't want the rifle being misjudging a little bit to a barrel that's too hot, or you fire too many rounds to it. So don't be too quick when you're sighting these things in. Shoot 2 or 3 rounds, get it close to where you want to hit it. You're not going to mess with the scope after that. What you need to do is to let the rifle cool off, clean the barrel, re-oil it, and then shoot again. And shoot another 2 or 3 rounds. And I'll guarantee you, your bullets will end up doing much better than you will be firing a lot of rounds to it, because it's going to alter the path of that bullet.
Well, either way, and where we're coming down to, it comes back to the same thing. You have to be totally familiar with whatever type of firearm you have, whether it's a gun, a pistol, or a handgun, hand rifle. You have to have the proper ammo. You have to have the proper training. You have to practice and practice and practice till you know how it is, and you have to maintain it. I mean, it's
almost a science of where you have to have a lot of things working to get it. These snipers, I'm telling you, they work on these things. They have meters to show them elevation, to show them windage, to show them yardage, how far it is. They can look out there and say it's 800 yards and all these things. But they come to tons of practice. And they're not going to put you out there until you become very efficient with that weapon. But then you go right down to the kid with the 22 rifle. We're having a lot of fun with it. But if you're really wanting to be a target shooter, he's got to put that thing in the circle, and it's going to be a long ways away. He has to apply the same things that you do with a high-powered rifle. He has to learn and respect that weapon, because this thing is a piece of machinery, and if it's not working right, you're not going to hit your target. You have to let everything work for you to do that, and it'll make you a good hunter and make you a good person with a weapon out there that's doing a good thing. If a bad thing happens, you've got something to defend yourself, and you know how to use it, you know how to shoot it, you know how to hit a target, and you're not going to be all over the place with it either.
The other thing, too, along with this stuff, and all these new gizmos today, you can put all this stuff onto your gun or your handgun. So you can change the stock, you can change the forearm, you can change the handles or the grips. You can put standard, you got your standard open iron sights on there, or you can use the laser sights or, you know, optics. Obviously, that's, you know, with a scope. I mean, tactical light sticks, tripods, bipods, all this stuff you can add on there. but it still comes down to the rifle is only going to be able to work as good as it is per design for that ammo.
Yeah, if you don't
and the
know
bullet's
how
going to go where you put it based on your skill to sight in and hold on to it to put the bullet into the same location time after time after
that's
time.
Right. You know, on the ranges that I used to go on, you had to learn how to, you know, you get the rifle, you get loaded, you get the safety off, you're aiming at your target, then you have to breathe. You take a deep breath, and you let it out slowly, and just as that breath leaves, you get an instant of total standing still, and you're in control of that weapon, and that's when you pull the trigger. You squeeze the trigger, bam, and it goes off. That bullet has the best chance of hitting its target right then. If your breathing is messed up or you're not practicing that, if you're not holding it steady, and when you add all this stuff on there, Doug, that weapon might weigh 15 pounds. How long can you hold it there? And the barrel, you know, you've got to look at the end of the barrel. You can't look back here at the stock and say, well, I think I'm holding it. Look at the barrel and see if it's moving around because that's where the bullet's going to go. I think if you're going to have put all that stuff on there, you probably need some bipods or something to hold it up with. With the old muskets, they always carried this rod with a hook at the top, and they would put that on the ground, and they put the barrel of that rifle on that, and it would hold it steady for them. I don't think most people carry those type of things, but they do make them. They still make them to do that. As a hunter, sometimes I'll use a limb or I'll use something of a tree or something to hold me steady so I can pull that trigger. But that 30-06 rifle loaded up, man, that's a heavy dude. And at that moment, you're excited, and if you're not careful, you're going to miss your target.
And that doesn't make for a good day in River City. Well, Ray, thank you again. Our time is up. Happy New Year. Thanks for everything over the year, and we'll continue on, ladies and gentlemen. Education, information, and all this stuff. Thank you, and God bless everybody, and have a good evening. Thank you very much, Ray. God bless you.
Thank you, Doug. You too. Bye-bye.